Hi, this is Tiffany. I just wanted to drop in to our podcast today and acknowledge COVID-19. The Digital to Learn podcast has pre-recorded episodes, and we do plan to continue on with those during this time. But we also just want to stop and acknowledge everything that you're going through and let you know that we're all in this together. And we hope that now more than ever, you find our content about digital learning relevant and useful in your daily lives. Everybody stay safe, and we just want to wish you some happy listening.
The big challenge in my mind, you know, you can make games that are fun, that people want to play, but they're often not very, they don't really learn much, right? You can make games that are educational, but maybe people don't want to play them so much, right? But the sweet spot, and I think especially for educators, is to make something that is just completely addictive, you know, as far as from the gaming standpoint, but also you learn a lot.
The Digital to Learn podcast is dedicated to exploring both what's new and what's good in the use of technology in teaching and learning.
Our mission is to have the best minds sitting in front of our microphones sharing evidence-based strategies for digital teaching and learning.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
Thank you for joining us. And now, the Digital to Learn podcast.
Welcome to the Digital to Learn podcast. This is Tiffany, and I'm here with my co-host, Brad. Hi, Brad.
Hello, hello. Glad to be here.
And we're back with part two of Quantum Computing with Jim Weaver. If you missed part one, you can access it on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or on our website, digitaltolearn.com. But for now, we're going to kick it off with part two, Jim Weaver, Quantum Computing. Welcome, Jim.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be back.
So can I make the assumption then that when you're using this quantum technology. So if you think of this as a new technology, relatively new, and assume that over the next 10 or 15 years, that's going to become a more common usage. Are there places in our country or around the world where students are being taught this technology today to use it tomorrow?
Right. Yeah, there's lots of different universities that have a quantum program in them. You see a lot of them in Canada, actually.
Okay. Wow.
You know, even their prime minister up there, he was on TV a year or so ago, but explaining quantum computing. That was kind of cool.
So there are places today where students are being prepared for that transition.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful.
That's awesome.
No.
Absolutely. And then we have hackathons and things like that. So we have IBM and other companies sponsor hackathons to where we go, and students come in, physicists, non-physicists, whatever, come in, and we have 24-hour hackathons where we solve different problems or or toy problems, things like that, and extend the research. I saw a sign on the door here. It's like said Sheldon Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Right, so that's, yeah, he had an office here at one time.
Yeah, so that's you know, something out of Big Bang Theory, and you see the whiteboards and everything.
Yeah.
Big, so at these hackathons, it's just what you see is these whiteboards.
Wow. Sounds like a nerd fest to me. Yeah, I don't know.
It really is. It's
a
nerd fest,
a
but
fun
the,
one.
The ones that IBM has, we always do them on a mountain. In Switzerland, we had one in the Alps.
I think the next Digital to Learn conference will be in that location.
Yeah. And we just came back from one at near Mount Fuji.
Wow.
In Asia. And
I think whether we're talking about computing or any other area in higher ed, we're really challenging ourselves to partner with industry more and more and more. Mm-hmm. The university and industry would unite. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you're the perfect example of someone in industry that's just involved in opportunities to work with university students and involve them in the future of what industry is doing. And yeah, we're really looking to do that with all areas of study, not just quantum computing. So for those of us that don't study quantum computing, what are some of the ways that we don't even realize, some of the ways in the future that we might be interacting with this kind of technology and we won't even know it?
It's a very good question.
asking that for myself because I have a feeling I might interact with some of the solutions that have come from this kind of technology, but not appreciate perhaps the what happened to get us there.
And we'll look back and go, Jim did this.
Jim did this. Yeah, from Switzerland.
So some of the things that are being experimented with right now are things called quantum communication. Oh. There's this thing called entanglement, where you can take two quantum particles and you can entangle them through some mechanism. Like, for example, if they're atoms, you could put them close to each other and shoot them with a laser beam, and that will then entangle them. And then you can separate them by millions of miles. And because of this entanglement, when you measure one, if you observe one, and maybe it collapses in some state, I always use the example of cats, grumpy cat and happy cat, right? And so you could take, because if you have one quantum particle, it's going to collapse into one of two states, even or odd, right? Happy or grumpy, whatever. So let's say that I have these two microscopic cats, and if I entangle them and separate them by millions of miles, then if I observe one and the cat is happy, then the other cat, when there's 100% probability that it will be happy as well. It will collapse as happy as well. Hmm. Conversely, maybe I look at this other one and it's grumpy. There's 100% probability this other one will be grumpy as well. But it's not something that's predetermined. Mm-hmm. It's just something that it collapses and somehow, you know, and this behavior was baked into the universe when it was created. Somehow, when you observe one, then the other one collapses in the exact same state, right? So you can leverage that then for communication, these entangled particles for communication. Mm. And you can tell, for example, if you have a quantum communication channel, mm-hmm. then if somebody snoops on it, eavesdrops on it, then by its very nature, because when you observe a quantum particle, it collapses, then the communication is going to be secure because when somebody observes it, right?
Yep.
Then it collapses. And so you know that downstream that it wasn't intercepted because it, you know, because they ruined it. So they've been doing experiments. Like the Chinese have been doing experiments. They'll take a satellite, put it in low Earth orbit, and then they'll shoot a photon at it. They'll entangle two photons, right? They'll shoot one to the satellite, and then they'll observe it. You know, on the satellite, they have instruments to measure the polarization of that particular photon. Mm-hmm. And then when they observe the one on Earth, the entangled pair, then it collapses to the same state as was measured.
Trust that.
Yeah. And so that's one area that we'll see. Mm-hmm. Another area that we'll be interacting with as we get more and more quantum bits, mm-hmm. the area of modeling nature. So we'll see chemists and people that are doing drug discovery mm-hmm. modeling nature with quantum computers.
I see.
The problem there has been, and that's really the original purpose of a quantum computer is to be able to do that, because to model nature is an exponentially hard problem. Every time you add one electron to a molecule, to accurately model it, every electron you add doubles the size that you need to be able to store in memory. So our largest supercomputers right now can only handle about maybe a system that has about 50 electrons in it. So we can't really accurately model molecules that are over 50 electrons in them. And so we're just kind of guessing at that point when we get into larger systems. And so I think one of the things that we'll see first is using quantum computers to accurately model larger and larger molecules. Mm-hmm. Because the idea is that for every quantum particle in the quantum computer, as we increase the number of quantum computers or quantum particles in the quantum computer, then we can, every one we add here, we can model outside. And so I think that we'll see some innovations there.
So So we've heard a rumor that you're using the game Minecraft to teach quantum computing.
Yeah.
How does that translate?
Right. So there are several models of being able to program quantum computers, right? So like with classical computers, you can take text, keywords, things like that. If something, then something else. And also, if you kind of break that down to a more basic form or a more elemental form, you can think in terms of logic gates. So these bits, if you AND them together, you know, if this bit is on and this bit is on, then do something here, and et cetera. So you can boil it down to gates. Well, with quantum computing, instead of bits, you have these quantum bits, and you can think of these as a circuit. And so then you can put gates, these quantum gates, things like X gates or what's called an Hadamard gate or things or other kinds of gates. You can put those on these wires, these qubit quantum bit wires. But it becomes a little bit hard to visualize sometimes what's going on, you know, maybe dry to interact with. And so what I did about a year ago is using a technology called MindTest, which is it's kind of a Minecraft clone. It's an open source version of Minecraft. Okay. I created a mod then for MindTest that would allow kids, anybody really, any gamer, to go in and explore and build these to build circuits, by wielding blocks and throwing them on a circuit, and then seeing with other blocks, then the quantum states, and then I kind of combined that with some ideas from Portal 2.
Oh, wow.
And by the way, my consultant on all this, the gaming consultant, was actually Mike's son, Mike Jones's son, Christian Jones, my son-in-law, who gave me lots of tips in how to pull this off from a gaming
son-in-law project.
From a gaming perspective, yeah.
So you promise you'll call me when you have a Call of Duty version?
Yeah, right. Yeah, and so then you can. So I made some escape rooms.
Oh wow!
Where you go in, you have to you look around. You try to figure out how am I going to get out of this room. And so the challenge then is to try to construct this quantum circuit that matches the quantum state that's on the wall. And when you've done that, the door opens.
What has the response been like for?
So kids love it.
Yeah,
kids love it.
Of course.
Yeah. So we do. I've done several workshops for high school kids, even middle school kids, and you can't pull them away from it.
Yeah.
You know, they're like they're sad when the workshop's over.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
What a neat way to learn. I mean, just what it sounds like in your job, and maybe why you're enjoying it so much, is you get to translate now. So you've been invested in all this book knowledge, and it's so technical, but now you're getting to share what you're learning with the old classic computing community, but also kids. So
that's exactly right, Tiffany.
Translating to all these different generations even, and I guess challenging yourself to talk about it in many different kinds of ways. That's rewarding work.
Absolutely.
So by being on this podcast...
And the podcast.
You probably aren't aware of this, but... We understand that every faculty member in America, actually around the world, listen to this podcast.
Oh, really?
Faithfully, yes.
That's really nice, yeah.
So you have that platform right now at this moment.
Excellent.
What would you say to them about using technology and teaching?
Using technology and teaching. Mm-hmm. So what I would say to them...
And you are right now. You're speaking to all of them. So
right. No, I understand. Yeah.
Pick your words carefully. No,
probability. We did some quantum computing just to determine that's
yes, right.
True.
Yes. No, this is a very awesome responsibility.
It's
have
overwhelming,
in
isn't
what
it?
What I'm
really
going to say next. Yes.
We're buying you time.
Yes. No, it's something I've thought about for a long time. Every time I watch some kid play a video game in which they're earning imaginary internet points, and
wait, those are imaginary?
Yeah. And so it's like, excuse this expression, I'm sorry. It's called, I read a blog a few years ago, and that idea is called achievement porn.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Where it's this sense of achievement, but it's not really, you're not really achieving anything, right? Mm-hmm. Not achieving anything useful. So one of the motivations behind the Minecraft clone game was through playing the game, they're actually learning something.
Yep.
Right? The big challenge in my mind, you know, you can make games that are fun, mm-hmm. that people want to play, mm-hmm. but they're often not very, they don't really learn much, right? You can make games that are educational, but maybe people don't want to play them so much, right? But the sweet spot, and I think especially for educators, is to make something that is just completely addictive, you know, as far as from a gaming standpoint, but also you learn a lot, right?
And so, although educators are typical to say, wait a minute, this can't be any good because I'm having fun. Wait, what do you mean?
Yeah, there you go.
It has to be hard. It has to be painful.
Yes, yes. So that's one. You know, make it so that find that sweet spot to where something goes. And the other thing, Mike just mentioned this just before we came in, talking about flipping the classroom, mm-hmm. right? So so videos and other experiences that the students can do that they would do anyway for fun.
Right.
Binge learning, right?
Right.
And videos and other things outside of class, mm-hmm. and then flip the classroom so that then you just kind of touch base on it, right?
Yeah. Or even you were talking earlier about students going to a boot camp of sorts, but if how cool it would be for a university, I'm thinking, to partner with industry in that way and send their students out for a couple week-long or month-long boot camp and then bring them back and flip the classroom like that. Too.
Oh, just, my word. How powerful
how
would
powerful
that be?
It could be. Yeah. They're working on a business problem for just head down working on that, and then they come back and talk about it. Just what a neat learning opportunity it could be.
I just want to comment that our phone bank is lighting up. People are calling in from all over the world.
Oh, really? Nice.
To say,
nice.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
Nice. Put me on that team.
Very
yeah.
good. Yes.
Yeah.
Jim, it's been amazing to have you here with us. I'm just in awe of your brain right now.
Yeah.
And the things that you're thinking about. And I'm so glad you're doing it.
Yeah. And we need people doing that. Because
yes.
it just is like, wow, there are some people doing some really neat things. And that's kind of what we're wanting to bring attention to on here.
Well, you've inspired me and helped me a lot as
good.
Here in this process. I appreciate
you.
Well, thanks for being with us.
Yes. Yeah.
And for those of you out there listening, we apologize that you can't get through to us on the phone right now, but just be patient. We will take your calls as they come in.
And we will have some resources linked on the Digital to Learn website, links to Jim's work and related topics. So make sure to check us out there too.
And a few Blood, Sweat, and Tears tunes as well.
There you go. You've made me so very happy.
Oh, what a perfect way to end. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Digital to Learn.
If you enjoyed this podcast, there are three things we ask you to do. One, come back and join us again. Two, tell your friends about us. And three, give us a positive ranking on your favorite podcast platform.
Digital to Learn is brought to you by the Center for Learning and Innovation at Indiana Wesleyan University.
It's a digital world.
Always keep learning.